Christina. He wondered what had passed between her and Diego. Mark turned away from the window just as the sound came. His hearing had been sharpened by years in the hunt. He doubted anyone else in the Institute would have heard it or been awakened. It was a single note, the sound of Gwyn the Hunter's horn, sharp and harsh, as lonely as mountains. Mark's blood went cold. It was not a greeting or even a call to the hunt. It was the note Gwyn blew when they were searching out a deserter. It was the sound of betrayal. Julian had straightened up, raking his hands through his tangled curls, his jaw set. "Emma," he said, "go back inside." Emma turned and strode back into the Institute, only long enough to seize up Cortana from where it hung beside the door. She stalked back outside to find that the ferry convoy had dismounted their horses, who remained unnaturally still as if tied in place. Their eyes were blood red, their manes wound with red flowers. Fairy steeds. Gwyn had approached the foot of the steps. He had a strange face, slightly alien, wide eyes, broad cheekbones, wicked eyebrows. One black eye and one that was pale blue. Beside him came Erloth, his yellow eyes unblinking. And at his side, Kieran. He was as beautiful as Emma had remembered him, and looked as cold. His pale face was as severely cut as white marble, his black and silver eyes uncanny in the daylight. "What's going on?" Emma demanded. "Has something happened?" Gwyn glanced at her dismissively. "This is none of your affair, Carstairs girl," he said. "This matter concerns Mark Blackthorne. None of the rest of you." Julian crossed his arms over his chest. "Anything that concerns my brother concerns me. In fact, it concerns all of us." Kieran's mouth set into a hard, uncompromising line. "We are Gwyn and Kieran of the Wild Hunt, and Erloth of the Unseelie Court, here on a matter of justice. And you will fetch your brother." Emma moved to stand in the center of the top step, unsheathing Cortana, which sent bright sparks skittering into the air. "Don't tell him what to do," she said. "Not here. Not on the steps of the Institute." Gwyn gave an unexpected, rumbling laugh. "Don't be a fool, Carstairs girl," he said. "No single shadow hunter can hold off three of the fair folk, not even armed with one of the great swords." "I wouldn't underestimate Emma," said Julian in a voice like razor wire, "or you'll find your head lying on the ground next to your still twitching body."
"How graphic," said Erloth, amused.
"I'm here," said a breathless voice behind them, and Emma half closed her eyes, fear going through her like pain. "Mark." It looked as if he had thrown on jeans and a sweater in a hurry, and jammed his feet into sneakers. His blonde hair was ruffled and he looked younger than he usually did, his eyes wide with surprise and undefended astonishment. "But my time isn't up," Mark said. He was speaking to Gwyn but looking at Kieran. There was an expression on his face, one Emma couldn't interpret or describe, one that seemed to mix pleading and pain and gladness. "We're still trying to find out what's going on. We're nearly there, but the deadline..."
"Deadline?" Kieran echoed. "Listen to you. You sound like one of them."
Mark looked surprised.
"But Kieran..." "Mark Blackthorne," said Erloth. "You stand accused of sharing one of the secrets of Faerie with a shadow hunter, despite being expressly forbidden to do so."
Mark let the door of the Institute fall shut behind him. He took several steps forward until he was standing beside Julian. He clasped his hands behind his back. They were shaking.
I don't know what you mean," he said. "I haven't told my family anything forbidden."
"Not your family," said Kieran, an ugly twist to his voice.
"Her."
"Her?" Julian said, looking at Emma, but she shook her head.
"Not me," she said. "He means Christina." "You didn't expect us to leave you unobserved, did you, Mark?" Kieran said.
His black and silver eyes were like etched daggers.
"I was outside the window when I heard you speaking with her. You told her how Gwyn could be deprived of his powers. A secret known only to the hunt and forbidden to repeat."
Mark had turned the color of ashes.
"I didn't." "There is no point in lying," said Erloth. "Kieran is a prince of Faerie and cannot speak untruths. If he says he overheard this, then he did.
Mark shifted his gaze to Kieran. The sunlight no longer seemed beautiful to Emma, but merciless, beating down on Mark's gold hair and skin. Hurt spread across his face like the stain of red from a slap.
It would never mean anything to Christina. She would never tell anyone. She would never hurt me or the hunt.
Kieran turned his face away, his beautiful mouth twisting at the corner.
Enough.
Mark took a step forward.
Kieran, he said, how can you do this to me?
Kieran's face was bleak with pain.
Mine is not the betrayal, he said. Speak to your shadow hunter princess of promises broken.
Gwyn, Mark turned to plead with the hunt's leader. What is between myself and Kieran is not a matter for the law of the courts or the hunt. Since when do they interfere in matters of the heart? Matters of the heart. Emma could see it on both their faces, Mark's and Kieran's, in the way they looked at each other and the way they didn't. She wondered how she had missed it before, in the sanctuary, that these were two people who loved each other. Two people who had hurt each other the way only two people in love could.
Kieran looked at Mark as if Mark had taken something irreplaceably precious from him, and Mark looked
crushed. Emma thought of herself on the beach in the morning, with Julian, and the lonely screech of the gulls circling overhead.
Child, said Gwyn, and to Emma's surprise, there was gentleness in his voice. I regret the necessity of this visit more than I can say. And believe me, the hunt does not interfere, as you say, in matters of the heart. But you broke one of the oldest laws of the hunt and put every member of it into danger.
Exactly, said Kieran. Mark has broken the law of Faerie, and for that, he must return to Faerie with us and tarry no longer in the human world.
No, said Irloth. That is not the punishment.
What?
Kieran turned to him, puzzled. His hair flared at the edges with blue and white like hoarfrost.
But you said...
I said nothing to you of punishments, princeling, said Irloth, stepping forward. You told me of Mark Blackthorne's actions, and I said they would be duly dealt with. If you believed that meant he would be dragged back to Faerie to be your companion, then perhaps you should remember that the security of the gentry of Faerie is more paramount than the fancies of a son of the Unseelie King.
He looked hard at Mark, his eyes eerie in the bright sunlight.
The king has given me leave to choose your punishment, he said. It will be 20 whiplashes across the back, and count yourself lucky it is not more.
No! The word was like an explosion. To Emma's surprise, it was Julian who never raised his voice, Julian who never shouted. He started down the steps. Emma followed him, Cortana ready in her hand. Kieran and Mark were silent, looking at each other. The rest of the blood had left Kieran's face and he looked sick. He didn't move as Julian stepped forward, blocking Kieran's view of Mark.
If any of you touch my brother to harm him, Julian said, I will kill you.
Gwyn shook his head.
Do not think I do not admire your spirit, Blackthorn, he said. But I would think twice before moving to harm a convoy of Faerie.
Move to prevent this, and our agreement will be at an end, said Irloth.
The investigation will stop, and we will take Mark back with us to Faerie. And he will be whipped there, and worse than any whipping he could receive here. You will win nothing and lose much.
Julian's hands tightened into fists. You think you alone understand honor? You who cannot understand what we might lose by standing here and letting you humiliate and torture Mark? This is why Faeries are despised, this senseless cruelty.
Careful, boy, rumbled Gwyn. You have your laws and we have ours. The difference is only that we do not pretend ours are not cruel.
The law is hard, said Irloth with amusement. But it is the law.
Mark spoke for the first time since Irloth had pronounced his sentence.
A bad law is no law, he said.
He looked dazed. Emma thought of the boy who had collapsed in the sanctuary, who had screamed when he was touched and spoken of beatings that still clearly terrified him. She felt as if her heart was being ripped out to whip Mark, of all people. Mark, whose body might heal but whose soul would never recover.
You came to us, Julian said. There was desperation in his voice. You came to us. You made a bargain with us. You needed our help. We've put everything on the line, risked everything to solve this. Fine, Mark made a mistake, but this loyalty test is misplaced.
It is not about loyalty, said Erloff. It is about setting an example. These are the laws. This is how it works. If we let Mark betray us, others will learn we are weak.
His look was pleased, greedy.
The bargain is important, but this is more important.
Mark moved forward then, catching at Julian's shoulder.
You can't change it, little brother, he said. Let it happen.
He looked at Erloth and then at Gwyn. He didn't look at Kieran.
I will take the punishment.
Emma heard Erloth laugh. It was a cold, sharp sound, like cracking icicles. He reached into his cloak and pulled out a handful of blood-red stones. He threw them to the ground. Mark, clearly familiar with what Erloth was doing, blanched. At the spot on the ground where Erloth had thrown his stones, something had begun to grow. A tree, bent and gnarled and twisted, its bark and leaves the color of blood. Mark watched it in horrified fascination. Kieran looked as if he was going to throw up.
Jules, Emma whispered.
It was the first time she had called him that since the night on the beach.
Julian stared blindly at Emma for a moment before turning and lurching the rest of the way down the steps.
After a frozen moment, Emma followed him. Erloth moved immediately to block her way.
Put your sword away, he snarled. No weapons in the presence of the fair folk. We know well you cannot be trusted with them.
Emma whipped Cortana up so fast that the blade was a blur. The tip of it sailed beneath Erloth's chin, a millimeter from his skin, describing the arc of a deadly smile. He made a noise in his throat even as she slammed the sword into the sheath on her back with enough force to be audible. She stared at him, eyes blazing with rage. Gwyn chuckled.
And here I thought all the car stairs were good for was music.
Erloth gave Emma a filthy look before whirling away and stalking toward Mark. He had begun unwinding a coil of rope from where it was tied at his waist.
Put your hands on the trunk of the quick beam, he said.
Emma assumed he meant the dark, twisted tree with its sharp branches and blood-colored leaves.
No!
Kieran, sounding desperate, whirled fluidly toward Erloth. He dropped to the ground, kneeling, his hands outstretched.
I beg you, he said, as a prince of the Unseelie Court. I beg you. Do not hurt Mark. Do what you will with me instead.
Erloth snorted.
Whipping you would incur your father's wrath. This will not. Get to your feet, child prince. Do not shame yourself further.
Kieran staggered upright.
Please, he said, looking not at Erloth but at Mark.
Mark gave him a look full of so much searing hate Emma nearly recoiled. Kieran looked, if possible, even sicker.
You should have foreseen this, whelp, said Erloth. But his gaze wasn't on Kieran, it was on Mark, hungry, full of appetite, as if the thought of whipping drew him like the thought of food.
Mark reached out toward the tree. Julian stepped forward.
Whip me instead, he said.
For a moment, everyone froze. Emma felt as if a baseball bat had slammed into her chest.
No, she tried to say, but the word wouldn't come out.
Mark whirled around to face his brother.
You can't, he said. Mine is the crime. Mine must be the punishment.
Julian stepped past Mark, almost pushing him aside in his determination to present himself in front of Gwyn. He stood with his back straight and chin up. In a fairy battle, one can pick a champion to represent them, he said. If I could stand in for my brother in a fight, why not now?
Because I'm the one who broke the law.
Mark looked desperate. My brother was taken at the beginning of the Dark War, Julian said. He never fought in the battle. His hands are clean of fairy blood. Whereas I was in Alicante. I killed fair folk.
He's goading you, Mark said. He doesn't mean it.
I do mean it, said Julian. It is the truth.
If someone volunteers to take the place of a condemned man, we cannot gainsay it.
Gwyn's look was troubled.
Are you sure, Julian Blackthorne?
This is not your punishment to take.
Julian inclined his head.
I'm sure.
Let him take the whipping, Kieran said. He wants it. Let him have it.
After that, things happened very quickly. Mark threw himself at Kieran,
his expression murderous. He was shouting as he dug his fingers into the front of Kieran's shirt. Emma moved forward and was knocked back by Gwyn, who moved to pull Kieran and Mark apart, pushing Mark brutally aside.
"Bastard," Mark said.
His mouth was bleeding. He spit at Kieran's feet.
"You arrogant—"
"Enough, Mark," snapped Gwyn. "Kieran is the prince of the Unseelie Court."
"He is my enemy," said Mark. "Now and forevermore, my enemy."
He raised a hand as if to strike Kieran. Kieran didn't move, just looked at him with shattered eyes. Mark lowered his hand and turned away as if he couldn't bear to look at Kieran any longer.
"Jules," he said instead. "Julian, please don't do this. Let me."
Julian gave his brother a slow, sweet smile.
In that smile was all the love and wonder of the little boy who'd lost his brother and against all odds gotten him back.
"It can't be you, Mark."
"Take him," Irloth said to Gwyn, and Gwyn, reluctance written all over his face, stepped forward and caught hold of Mark, pulling him away from Julian. Mark struggled, but Gwyn was a massive man with enormous arms. He held tightly to Mark, his expression impassive, as Julian reached down and pulled off his jacket and then his shirt. In the bright daylight, his skin, lightly tanned but paler over his back and chest, looked vulnerable and exposed. His hair was ruffled all over from the collar of the shirt, and as he dropped it on the ground, he looked at Emma. His look broke through the icy vice of shock that gripped her.
"Julian," her voice shook, "you can't do this."
She moved forward and found Erloth blocking her way.
"Stay," Erloth hissed.
He stepped away from Emma, who went to go after him and found her legs pinned in place. She couldn't move. The buzz of enchantment prickled along her legs and spine, holding her as firmly in place as a bear trap. She tried to wrench herself forward and had to bite back a shriek of pain as the fairy magic clamped and tore at her skin. Julian took a step forward and put his hands against the tree, bending his head. The long line of his spine was incongruously beautiful to Emma. It looked like the arch of a wave just before it crashed. White scars and black marks patterned his back like a child's illustration drawn in skin and blood.
"Let me go," Mark shouted, twisting in Gwyn's grasp. It was like a nightmare, Emma thought. One of those dreams where you're running and running and never getting anywhere, except now it was real.
She was struggling to move her arms and legs against the invisible force that kept her pinned like a butterfly to a board. Irloth strode toward Julian. Something flashed in his hand, something long and thin and silver. As it flicked forward, tasting the air, Emma saw he was clutching the black handle of a silver whip. He drew his arm back.
"Foolish shadow hunters," he said. "Too naive to even know who you can trust."
The whip came down. Emma saw it bite into Julian's skin, saw the blood, saw him arch back, his body bowing. Pain exploded inside her. It was as if a bar of fire had been laid across her back. She flinched, tasting blood inside her mouth.
"Stop it," Mark yelled. "Can't you see you're hurting them both? That's not the punishment. Let me go. I don't have a parabatai. Let me go. Whip me instead."
His words ran together inside Emma's head. Pain was still throbbing through her body. Gwyn, Irloth, and Kieran were looking from her to Julian. There was a long bloody welt along Julian's back, and he was clutching the trunk of the tree. Sweat darkened his hairline. Emma's heart cracked. If what she had felt had been agony, what had he felt? Twice, four times as much?
"Send her away," she heard Irloth say irritably. "This wailing is ridiculous."
"This is not hysterics, Irloth," said Kieran. "It's because she's his parabatai, his warrior partner. They're bonded."
"By the lady, such fuss," Irloth hissed, and brought the whip down again.
This time Julian made noise, a choked sound barely audible. He slid to his knees, still clutching at the tree. Pain lanced through Emma again, but now she was braced, prepared. She screamed, not just any scream, but an echoing sound of horror and betrayal, a shriek of rage and pain and fury. Gwyn threw his arm out toward Irloth, but he was looking at Emma.
"Stop," he said.
Emma felt the weight of his gaze, and then a lightness as the enchantment that had pinned her in place snapped asunder. She dashed toward Julian and dropped down beside him, yanking her steely from her belt. She could hear Irloth protest, and Gwyn telling him gruffly to leave it be. She paid no attention. All she could see was Julian on his knees, his arms around the trunk of the tree, his forehead pressed to it. Blood ran down his naked back. The muscles in his shoulders flexed as she reached for him, as if he were bracing himself for a third blow.
"Jules," she thought.
As if he heard her, he half-turned his face. He had bitten through his lower lip, blood dripped off his chin. He looked at her blindly, like a man staring at a mirage.
"Em," he gasped.
"Shush," she said, putting her hand against his cheek, her fingers in his hair. He was wet with blood and sweat, his pupils blown wide open. She could see herself in them, her pale, strained face. She laid her steely against his skin.
"I need to heal him," she said. "Let me heal him."
"This is ridiculous," Irloth protested. "The boy should take the whipping."
"Leave it, Irloth," said Gwyn. His arms were tight around Mark. Irloth subsided, muttering. Mark was struggling and gasping. The steely was cold in Emma's hand, colder still as she brought it down against Julian's skin. She drew the rune.
"Sleep, my love," she whispered,
so low that only Julian could hear her. For a moment his eyes fluttered wide, clear and astonished. Then they shut, and he slumped to the ground.
"Emma!" Mark's voice was a shout. "What have you done?"
Emma rose to her feet, turning to see Erlot's face, blazing with rage. Gwyn, though, she thought she caught a flash of amusement in his eyes. "I knocked him out," she said. "He's unconscious. Nothing you can do will wake him."
Irloth's lip curled. "You think to deprive us of our punishment by depriving him of his ability to feel it? Are you such a fool?"
He turned toward Gwyn.
"Bring Mark forward," he snarled. "We will whip him instead. And then we will have whipped two Blackthorns."
"No," Kieran cried. "No. I forbid it. I cannot bear it."
"No one cares what you can bear, princeling, least of all I," said Irloth. His smile was twisted. "Yes, we will whip both brothers," he said. "Mark will not escape, and I doubt your Parabatai will soon forgive you for it," he added, turning back to Emma.
"Instead of whipping two Blackthorns," she said, "you can whip a Carstairs. Wouldn't that be better?" Gwyn had moved at Irloth's order. Now his eyes widened. Kieran drew in his breath. "Julian told you he killed fairies during the Dark War," she said. "But I have killed many more. I cut their throats. I wet my fingers with their blood. I'd do it again."
"Silence!" rage filled Irloth's voice. "How dare you brag of such things?"
She reached down and yanked up her shirt. Mark's eyes widened as she dropped it to the ground. She was standing in front of all of them in just her bra and jeans. She didn't care. She didn't feel naked. She felt clothed in rage and fury like a warrior from one of Arthur's tales.
"Whip me," she said.
"Agree to it, and this will end here. Otherwise, I swear I will hunt you through the lands of Faerie unto eternity. Mark can't, but I can." Irloth said something exasperated in a language Emma didn't know, turning to look at the ocean. Kieran moved forward as he did so, toward Julian's crumpled form.
"Don't you touch him!" Mark yelled,
but Kieran didn't look at him, just slid his hands under Julian's arms and drew him away from the tree. He laid him down a few feet away, removing his own long tunic to wrap it around Jules' unconscious, bleeding body. Emma expelled a breath of relief. The sun felt hot on her naked back.
"Do it," she said, "unless you're too cowardly to whip a girl."
"Emma, stop," said Mark. His voice was full of a terrible ache. "Let it be me." Irloth's eyes had brightened with a cruel light.
"Very well, Carstairs," he said. "Do as your Parabatai did. Ready yourself for the whip."
Emma saw Gwyn's expression turn to one of sadness as she moved toward the tree. The bark up close was smooth and dark red-brown. It felt cool to the touch as she slid her arms around it. She could see the individual cracks in the bark. She gripped the wood with her hands. She heard Mark call her name again, but it seemed to be coming from very far away. Irloth moved to stand behind her. The whip whistled as he raised it. She closed her eyes. In the darkness behind her eyelids, she saw Julian, and fire around him, fire in the chambers of the silent city. She heard his voice whisper the words, those old words from the Bible, taken and remade by shadow hunters to form the Parabatai oath.
"Whither thou goest,
I will go.
The whip came down. If she had thought she felt pain before, it was agony now. Her back felt as if it were being opened up by fire. She ground her teeth together to silence her scream.
Entreat me not to leave thee.
Again. The pain was worse this time. Her fingers bit into the wood of the tree.
Or to return from following after thee.
Again. She slid to her knees.
The angel do so to me, and more also, if aught but death part thee and me.
Again. The pain rose up like a wave, blotting out the sun. She screamed, but she couldn't hear herself. Her ears were stoppered, the world crumpling, folding in on itself. The whip came down a fifth time, a sixth time, a seventh, but now she barely felt it as the darkness swallowed her.
23. To Love and Be Loved.
Christina came out of Emma's bedroom looking somber. Mark caught a glimpse of the room before the door closed behind her. He saw Emma's still form, looking small beneath a pile of heavy covers, and Julian sitting on the bed beside her. His brother's head was bent, his dark hair falling to cover his face. Mark had never seen him so miserable.
"Is she all right?" he asked Christina.
They were alone in the corridor. Most of the kids were still asleep. Mark didn't want to remember his brother's face when Julian had woken up near the quick beam and seen Mark kneeling over Emma's body, her steely in his hand, drawing healing runes on her lacerated skin with the shaking, unpracticed hand of someone long unused to the language of angels. He didn't want to remember the way Julian had looked when they'd come inside, Mark carrying Cortana and Julian with Emma in his arms, her blood all over his shirt, her hair matted with it. He didn't want to remember the way Emma had screamed when the whip came down and the way she'd stopped screaming when she collapsed. He didn't want to remember Kieran's face as Mark and Julian had raced back toward the Institute. Kieran had tried to stop Mark, had put his hand on his arm. His face had been bleached and pleading, his hair a riot of black and despairing blue. Mark had shaken off his grip. "Touch me again with your hand, and you will see it parted from your wrist forever," he had snarled, and Gwen pulled Kieran away from him, speaking to him in a voice that was equal parts sternness and regret.
"Let him be, Kieran," he said. "Enough has been done here this day."
They'd carried Emma into her bedroom, and Julian had helped lay her down on the bed while Mark had gone to get Christina. Christina hadn't screamed when he'd awoken her, or even when she'd seen Emma in her torn and blood-soaked clothes. She'd gone to work helping them. She'd put Emma into clean, dry clothes and retrieved bandages for Jules, had washed the blood from Emma's hair.
"She will be all right," Christina said now. "She will heal."
Mark didn't want to remember the way Emma's skin had opened as the whip had come down, or the sound the whip made, the smell of blood mixing with the salt of the ocean air.
"Mark."
Christina touched his face. He turned his cheek into her palm, involuntarily. She smelled like coffee and bandages. He wondered if Julian had told her everything, of Kieran's suspicions of her, of Mark's inability to protect his brother or Emma. Her skin was soft against his. Her eyes, upturned, were wide and dark. Mark thought of Kieran's eyes, like fragments of the glass inside a kaleidoscope shattered and polychromatic. Christina's were steady, singular. She brought her hand down the side of his jaw, her expression thoughtful. Mark felt as if his whole body were tightening into a knot.
"Mark."
It was Julian's voice, low, from the other side of the door.
"You should go in to your brother," Christina lowered her hand, brushing his shoulder once reassuringly. "This is not your fault," she said. "It is not. You understand?"
Mark nodded, unable to speak. "I will wake the children and tell them," she said, and set off down the hall, her stride as purposeful as if she were in gear, though she was wearing a t-shirt and pajama bottoms. Mark took a deep breath and pushed open the door to Emma's bedroom. Emma lay unmoving, her pale hair spread out over the pillow, her chest rising and falling with steady breaths. They had used sleep runes on her, as well as runes to kill pain, stop blood loss, and heal. Julian was still sitting beside her. Her hand was limp on the blanket. Julian had moved his own hand close to hers, their fingers interlocking but not touching. His head was turned away from Mark's. Mark could only see the hunched set of his shoulders, though with a vulnerable curve of the nape of his neck,
looked like the curve of Emma's back as the whip came down. He seemed very young.
I tried, Mark said. I tried to take the lashes. Gwen wouldn't allow it.
I know. I saw you try, Julian said in a flat voice. But Emma's killed fairies. You haven't. They wouldn't have wanted to whip you once they had the chance to whip her. It didn't matter what you did. Mark cursed himself silently. He had no idea what the human words were with which he could comfort his brother.
If she died, Julian went on in the same flat voice, I would want to die. I know that's not healthy, but it's the truth.
She won't die, Mark said. She's going to be fine. She just needs to recover. I have seen what men, what people, look like when they're going to die. There is a look that comes over them. This is not it.
I can't help wondering, said Julian. This whole business. Someone's trying to bring back the person they loved, a person who died. It feels almost wrong, as if maybe we should let them.
Jules, Mark said. He could feel the jagged edges of his little brother's emotions, like the touch of a razor on skin long covered by bandages. This was what it meant to be family, he thought, to hurt when someone else hurt, to want to protect them.
They're taking lives. You can't pay for tragedy with more tragedy or draw life from death.
I just know that if it were her, if it were Emma, I would do the same thing. Julian's eyes were haunted. I would do whatever I had to.
You wouldn't.
Mark put his hand on Julian's shoulder, pulling him around. Julian moved reluctantly to face his brother.
You would do the right thing. All your life, you've done the right thing.
I'm sorry, Julian said.
You're sorry. All of this, Jules, the convoy. If I hadn't told Christina about Gwen's cloak.
They would have found something else to punish you with, said Julian. Kieran wanted to hurt you. You hurt him, so he wanted to hurt you.
I'm sorry. Sorry about Kieran, because I can see you cared about him. I'm sorry I didn't know you had left anyone you cared about behind. I'm sorry that for years I thought you were the one who had freedom, that you were enjoying yourself in Faerie while I killed myself here, trying to raise four kids and run the Institute and keep Arthur's secrets. I wanted to believe you were okay. I wanted to believe one of us was okay, so much.
You wanted to believe I was happy, just as I wanted to believe the same about you, Mark said.
I had thought about whether you were happy, thriving, living. I had never stopped to wonder what kind of man you might have grown up to be.
He paused. I am proud of you. I've had little hand in the shaping of you, but I am proud nonetheless to call you my brother, to call all of you my brothers and sisters. And I will not leave you again.
Julian's eyes widened, their collar blackthorn bright in the gloom.
You won't go back to Faerie?
No matter what happens, Mark said.
I will stay here. I will always, always stay here.
He put his arms around Julian and held him tightly. Julian exhaled, as if he were letting go of something heavy that he had carried for a long time, and leaning on Mark's shoulder, he let his older brother bear just a little of his weight. Emma dreamed about her parents. They were in the small white-painted Venice house they had lived in when she was a child. She could see the faint glimmer of the canals from the window. Her mother sat at the kitchen island, a cloth spread out in front of her. On the cloth lay an array of knives, sorted from smallest to largest. The largest was Cortana, and Emma gazed at it hungrily, drinking in the smooth goldness, the sharp glow of the blade. Compared to the brilliance of the weapon, her mother seemed a shadow. Her hair glowed, and her hands, as she worked, but the edges of her were indistinct, and Emma was terrified that if she reached for her mother she would disappear. Music rose around them. Emma's father, John, came into the kitchen, his violin tucked against his shoulder. Usually he played with a shoulder rest, but not now. The violin poured forth music like water and the sharp crack of a whip. Pain like fire. Emma gasped. Her mother lifted her head.
Is something wrong, Emma?
No, nothing. She turned toward her father. Keep playing, Dad. Her father gave his gentle smile.
You sure you don't want to try?
Emma shook her head.
Whenever she touched bow to strings, it made the sound of a strangled cat.
"Music is in the blood of the Carstairs," he said. "This violin once belonged to Jem Carstairs."
Jem, Emma thought. Jem, who had helped her through her parabatai ceremony, with gentle hands and a thoughtful smile. Jem, who had given her his cat to watch over her.
Pain that went through skin like a blade. Christina's voice saying, "Emma, oh, Emma, why do they hurt you so much?"
Her mother lifted Cortana. "Emma, I'm sure you're 1,000 miles away."
"Maybe not quite that far," her father lowered his bow.
"Emma," it was Mark's voice. "Emma, come back. For Julian, please, come back."
"Trust him," said John Carstairs. "He will come to you, and he will need your help. Trust James Carstairs."
"But he said he had to go, Papa."
Emma had not called her father Papa since she was very small. "He said there was something he was looking for."
"He is about to find it," said John Carstairs. "And then there will be yet more for you to do."
"Jules, come have something to eat."
"Not now, Livy. I need to stay with her."
"But Papa," Emma whispered.
"Papa, you're dead."
John Carstairs smiled sadly. "As long as there is love and memory, there is no true death," he said. He put bow to strings and began to play again. Music rose up, swirling around the kitchen like smoke. Emma stood up from the kitchen chair. The sky was darkening outside, the setting sun reflected in the canal water.
"I have to go."
"Oh, Em." Her mother came around the kitchen island toward her. She was carrying Cortana.
"I know."
Shadows moved across the inside of her mind. Someone was holding her hand so tightly it hurt.
"Emma, please,"
said the voice she loved the most in the world.
"Emma, come back."
Emma's mother placed the sword in her hands. "Steel and temper, daughter," she said. "And remember that a blade made by Wayland the Smith can cut anything." "Go back," her father kissed her on the forehead. "Go back, Emma, to where you are needed."
"Mama," she whispered. "Papa."
She tightened her grip on the sword. The kitchen whirled away from her, folding up like an envelope. Her mother and father disappeared into it like words written long ago.
"Cortana," Emma gasped.
She thrashed upward and cried out in pain. Sheets were tangled around her waist. She was in bed, in her room. The lamps were on but dimly lit. The window cracked open slightly. The table next to the bed was piled with bandages and folded towels. The room smelled of blood and burning.
"Emma."
An incredulous voice, Christina, was sitting at the foot of the bed, a roll of bandages and some scissors in her hand. She dropped them to the floor as she saw that Emma's eyes were open and flung herself onto the bed.
"Oh, Emma."
She threw her arms around Emma's shoulders, and for a moment Emma clung to her. She wondered if this was what it was like to have an older sister, someone who could be your friend and also take care of you.
"Ouch,"
Emma said meekly.
"It hurts."
Christina pulled back. Her eyes were red-rimmed.
"Emma, are you all right? Do you remember everything that happened?"
Emma put a hand to her head. Her throat hurt. She wondered if it was from screaming. She hoped not. She hadn't wanted to give Erloff the satisfaction.
How long have I been passed out?"
"Out? Oh, asleep. Since this morning. All day, really. Julian has been here with you the whole time. I finally convinced him to eat something. He'll be horrified that you woke up and he wasn't here." Christina pushed Emma's tangled hair back.
"I should get up. I should see. Is everyone all right? Did anything happen?"
Her mind suddenly full of awful images of the fairies, done with her, going after Mark or Julian or somehow even the children. Emma tried to swing her legs over the side of the bed.
"Nothing has happened."
Christina pushed her back gently. "You are tired and weak. You need food and runes." "A whipping like that."
"You can whip someone to death. You know that, Emma?"
"Yes," Emma whispered.
"Will my back be scarred forever?"
"Probably," Christina said, "but it won't be bad. The Irazis closed the wounds quickly. They couldn't quite heal them all. There will be marks, but they will be light." Her eyes were red.
"Emma, why did you do it? Why?"
You really think your body is so much stronger than Mark's or Julian's?
No, Emma said. I think everyone is strong and weak in different ways. There are things I'm terrified of that Mark isn't, like the ocean. But he's been tortured enough. What it would have done to him, I don't even know. And Julian, I felt it when they whipped him. In my body, in my heart. It was the worst feeling I've ever felt, Christina. I would have done anything to stop it. It was selfish.
It was not selfish. Christina caught Emma's hand and squeezed it.
I have thought now for a while that I would never want a parabatai, she said. But I would feel differently, I think, if that parabatai could have been you.
I wish you were my parabatai too, Emma thought. But she couldn't say it. It felt disloyal to Julian, despite everything.
Instead, she said, I love you, Christina, and squeezed the other girl's hand back. But the investigation, I shall go with you.
To where? The library? Everyone has been reading and searching all day for more information about Lady Midnight. We will find something, but we have plenty of people to look at pages.
There are other things to do besides look at pages.
The door opened and Julian was on the threshold. His eyes widened and for a moment they were all Emma could see, like blue-green doors to another world.
Emma.
His voice sounded rough and cracked. He was wearing jeans and a loose white shirt, and beneath it the outline of a bandage, wrapping around his chest, was visible. His eyes were red, his hair tousled, and there was a faint sprinkling of stubble along his chin and cheeks. Julian never went without shaving, ever since the first time he'd shown up with stubble and Ty had told him, without preamble, I don't like it.
Julian, Emma said, are you all right?
But Julian had thrown himself across the room. Without seeming to see anything but Emma, he dropped to his knees and flung his arms around her, burying his face against her stomach. She reached down with a shaking hand and stroked his curls, raising her eyes in alarm to meet Christina's. But Christina was already rising to her feet, murmuring that she would tell the others that Julian was looking after Emma. Emma heard the lock click as she closed the bedroom door behind her.
Julian, Emma murmured, her hand tangling in his hair. He wasn't moving. He was entirely still. He breathed in shakily before lifting his head. By the angel, Emma, he said in a cracked whisper. Why did you do it?
She winced, and he was suddenly on his feet.
You need more healing runes, he said. Of course I'm so stupid. Of course you need them.
It was true. She did hurt. Some places ached dully, others with a sharper pain. Emma breathed in as Diana had taught her, slowly, steadily, as he retrieved his steely. He dropped down on the bed beside her. Hold still, he said, and put the instrument to her skin. She felt the pain ebb until it was a dull ache.
How long... When did you wake up? Emma asked.
He was in the act of putting his steely back on the table. If you mean, did I see them whip you? No, he said grimly. What do you remember?
I remember Gwyn and the others came, Irloth, Kieran.
She thought of blazing hot sun, a tree with bark the color of blood, black and silver eyes.
Kieran and Mark love each other.
They did, Julian said. I'm not sure how Mark feels about him now. She drew in a ragged breath.
I dropped Cortana.
Mark brought it inside, he said in a voice that indicated that Cortana was the last thing on his mind.
God, Emma, when I came back to consciousness, the convoy was gone and you were on the ground, bleeding. And Mark was trying to lift you up and I thought you were dead, he said, and there was not a trace of remoteness in his voice. Just a fierce wildness she had never really associated with Julian before.
They whipped you, Emma. You took the whipping meant for Mark and for me. I hate that you did that, you understand? I hate it. Emotion crackled and burned in his voice, like a fire raging out of control. How could you? Mark couldn't have stood the whipping, she said. It would have broken him, and I couldn't have borne watching them whip you. It would have broken me.
You think I don't feel the same way? He demanded. You think I haven't been sitting here all day, totally shattered and ripped apart? I'd rather cut my arm off than have you lose a fingernail, Emma.
It wasn't just about you, she said. The kids. Look, they expect me to fight to get hurt. They think, there's Emma scratched up again, cut up and bandaged.
But you, they look to you in a way they don't look to me.
If you were seriously hurt, it would scare them so badly, and I couldn't stand thinking of them so scared.
Julian's fingers tightened into a hard spiral. She could see the pulse running under his skin. She thought randomly of some graffiti she had seen on the side of the Malibu pier. Your heart is a weapon the size of your fist. God, Emma, he said. What I've done to you. They're my family, too, she said. Emotion was threatening to choke her. She bit it back. Sometimes I've wished that we were married and they were our kids, he said rapidly. His head was bowed. Married, Emma echoed, shocked. His head came up. His eyes were burning. Why do you think that I love me less than I love you? She said. He flinched visibly at the words. Because you said so. I as much as told you on the beach how I felt, and you said not that way, Emma. I'm tired of lying to each other, said Emma. Do you understand? I'm sick of it, Julian. He scrubbed his hands through his hair. I can't see any way for this to be all right, he said. I can't see anything but a nightmare where everything falls apart and where I don't have you. You don't have me now, she said. Not in the way that matters, the truthful way. She tried to kneel up on the bed. Her back ached and her arms and legs felt tired, as if she had run and climbed for miles. Julian's eyes darkened. Does it still hurt? He fumbled among the items on the nightstand, came up with a vial. Malcolm made me this a while ago. Drink it. The vial was full of a chartreuse gold liquid. It tasted a little like flat champagne. The moment Emma swallowed it, she felt a numbness sweep over her. The ache in her limbs receded and a cool, flowing energy replaced it. Julian took the vial from her and dropped it onto the bed. He slid one arm under her knees, the other under her shoulders, and lifted her bodily off the bed. For a moment she clung to him in surprise. She could feel his heart beating, smell his soap and paint and clove scent. His hair was soft against her cheek. What are you doing? She said. I need you to come with me. His voice was tight, as if he were screwing his courage up to do something horrible. I need you to see something. You make it sound like you're a serial killer with a freezer full of arms, Emma muttered as he shouldered open the door. The Clave would probably be happier about that. Emma wanted to rub her cheek against his, feel the roughness of his stubble. He was entirely a mess, actually, his shirt on inside out and his feet bare. She felt a rush of affection and wanting so intense that her whole body tightened. You can put me down, she said. I'm fine. I don't need to be princess carried. He laughed, a short, choked laugh. I didn't know that was a verb, he said, but he set her on her feet. Carefully and slowly, they leaned into each other, as if neither of them could stand the fact that in a moment they would no longer be touching. Emma's heart began to pound. It pounded as she followed Julian down the empty corridor, and it pounded as he started up the back staircase and went into his studio. It pounded as she leaned against the paint-covered island, and Julian went to take a key from a drawer by the window. She saw him breathe in, his shoulders rising. He looked the way he had when he was steeling himself to be whipped. Having gathered his courage, he went to the door of the locked room, the one that no one but him ever entered. He turned the key in the lock with a decisive click, and the door sprang open. He stood aside. Go in, he said. Years of ingrained habit and respect for Julian's privacy held Emma back. Are you sure? He nodded. He was pale. She drew away from the island and crossed the room with a sense of apprehension. Maybe he did have bodies in there. Whatever it was, it had to be something awful. She'd never seen him look like he did now. She stepped inside the room. For a moment she thought she'd stepped into a funhouse of mirrors. Reflections of herself stared back from every surface. The walls were covered with tacked-up sketches and paintings, and there was an easel as well, set up in one corner near the single window with a half-finished drawing on it. Two countertops ran the length of the east and west walls, and those, too, were covered in art. Every image was of her. There she was, training, holding Cortana, playing with Tavi, reading to Drew. In one watercolor, she was sleeping on the beach, her head pillowed on her hand. The details of the slope of her shoulder, the individual grains of sand stuck to her skin like sugar, had been rendered so lovingly that she felt almost dizzy. In another, she rose above the city of Los Angeles. She was naked, but her body was transparent. One could see only the outlines of it, and the stars of the night sky shone through her. her hair tumbled down like brilliant light, illuminating the world. She remembered what he'd said to her when they were dancing. "I was thinking about painting you, painting your hair, that I'd have to use titanium white to get the color right, the way it catches light and almost glows. But that wouldn't work, would it? It's not all one color, your hair. It's not just gold. It's amber and tawny and caramel and wheat and honey." She reached up to touch her hair, which she'd never thought of as anything but ordinary blonde, and then stared at the painting clipped to the easel. It was half-finished, an image of Emma striding out of the ocean, Cortana strapped to her hip. Her hair was down, as it was in most of the pictures, and he had made it look like the spray of the ocean at sunset, when the last rays of daylight turned the water to a brutal gold. She looked beautiful, fierce, as terrible as a goddess. She bit her lip. "You like my hair down," she said. Julian gave a short laugh. "Is that all you have to say?" She turned to look at him directly. They were standing close together. "These are beautiful," she said. "Why didn't you ever show them to me, to anyone?" He exhaled, gave her a slow, sad smile. "Ems, no one could look at these and not know how I feel about you." She put her hand on the counter. It suddenly seemed important to have something to keep her steady on her feet. "How long have you been drawing me?" He sighed. A moment later, his hand came to rest in her hair, his fingers twined in the strands. "My whole life."
"I remember you used to, but then you stopped."
"I never stopped. I just learned to hide it." His smile vanished. "My last secret."
"I very much doubt that," Emma said.
"I have lied and lied and lied," Julian spoke slowly. "I've made myself an expert at lying. I stopped thinking lies could be destructive, even evil, until I stood on that beach and told you I didn't feel that way about you." She was gripping the counter so hard her hand ached.
"Feel what way?"
"You know," he said, drawing away from her. Suddenly she thought she'd done too much, pushed him too far, but the desperation to know inside her overrode that.
"I need to hear it. Spell it out for me, Julian."
He went toward the door, took hold of the knob. For a moment she thought he was going to leave the room, and he swung the door of the small room closed, locked it, closing them inside. Turned to her, his eyes were luminous in the dim light. "I tried to stop," he said. "That's why I went to England. I thought that if I was away from you, maybe I'd stop feeling what I was feeling. But as soon as I got back, the first second that I saw you, I knew it hadn't made any difference." He looked around the room, his expression almost resigned. "Why all these paintings of you?"
"Because I'm an artist, Emma. These pictures are my heart. And if my heart was a canvas, every square inch of it would be painted over with you."
Her gaze locked with his.
"You mean it," she said. "You really mean it. I know I lied to you on the beach, but I swear on our Parabatai oaths, I'm telling you the truth now."
He spoke clearly, deliberately, as if he couldn't bear a single word he was telling her to be misunderstood or lost.
"I love everything about you, Emma. I love the way I can recognize your footsteps in the hallway outside my room, even when I didn't know you were coming. No one else walks or breathes or moves like you do. I love the way you gasp when you're asleep, like your dreams have surprised you. I love the way when we stand together on the beach, our shadows blend into one person. I love the way you can write on my skin with your fingers, and I can understand it better than I could understand someone else shouting in my ear. I didn't want to love you like this. It's the worst idea in the world that I love you like this. But I can't stop. Believe me, I've tried."
It was the pain in his voice that convinced her. It was the same pain that had beaten in her own heart for so long that she had stopped knowing it for what it was. She let go of the counter. She took a step toward Julian and then another one.
Are you in love with me?"
His smile was soft and sad.
"So much."
A moment later, she was in his arms and kissing him. She couldn't have said how it happened exactly, just that it seemed inevitable, and that for all that Julian's voice had been quiet when he'd spoken, his mouth on hers was eager and his body was wanting and desperate. He clutched her to him, his lips tracing the outline of her mouth. Her hands were fierce in his hair. She'd always loved his hair, and now that she could touch it freely, she buried her hands in the thick waves, winding them around her fingers. His hands slid to the backs of her thighs, and he lifted her up as if she weighed nothing. She locked her hands around his neck, clinging on as he held her against him with one arm. She was aware of him grabbing at the papers covering the counter, knocking them to the floor along with tubes of paint, until he'd cleared a space where he could set her down. She pulled him in, keeping her legs wrapped around his waist. There was nothing closed about him now, nothing diffident or remote or reticent as their kisses grew deeper, wilder, hotter. "Tell me I didn't screw this up forever," Julian gasped between kisses. "I was such an ass on the beach, and when I saw you with Mark in your room..." Emma slid her hands down to his shoulders, broad and strong under her grip. She felt drunk on kissing. This was what people fought wars over, she thought, and killed each other over, and destroyed their lives for, this nerve-shredding mixture of longing and pleasure. "Nothing was happening," his hand stroked her hair. "I know it's ridiculous, but when you had a crush on Mark when you were 12, it was the first time I remember ever being jealous. It doesn't make any sense, I know that, but the things we're most afraid of, we can't make ourselves dismiss them. If you and Mark ever... I don't think I could come back from that." Something about the raw honesty in his voice touched her. "Everyone has things they're afraid of," she whispered, moving closer into his arms. She slid her fingers under the hem of his shirt. "It's part of being human." His eyes slipped half-closed. His fingers raked down through her hair. His hands caressed her back lightly, then found her waist, pulling her harder into him. Her head fell back, almost banging into one of the cabinets. His lips burned on her collarbone. His skin was hot under her touch. She could understand suddenly why people talked about passion as fire. She felt as if they had caught a flame and were burning like the dry Malibu hills, about to become ashes that would mix together forever. "Tell me you love me, Emma," he said against her throat, "even if you don't mean it." She gasped. How could he think? How could he not realize? There was a sound of footsteps in the studio. "Julian?" Livy's voice echoed through the door. "Hey, Jules, where are you?" Emma and Julian ripped themselves away from each other in a panic. They were both disheveled, their hair mussed, their lips kiss-swollen. Nor could Emma imagine how they'd explain why they'd locked themselves into Julian's private room. "Jules!" Livy was yelling now, good-naturedly. "We're in the library, and Ty sent me to get you." Livy paused, most likely looking around the room. "Seriously, Julian, where are you?" The knob of the door turned. Julian stood frozen. The knob jiggled again, the door rattling against its lock. Emma tensed. There was a sound of a sigh. The knob stopped jiggling. Footsteps moved away from them, and then the studio door banged closed. Emma looked at Julian. She felt as if her blood had frozen and then unthawed suddenly. It was pounding through her veins like a spring torrent. "It's okay," she breathed. Julian caught her and hugged her fiercely, his bitten nailed hands digging into her shoulders. He gripped her so tightly she could barely breathe. Then he let go. He did it as if he was forcing himself, as if he were starving and he was putting aside the last piece of food he had. But he did it. "We'd better go," he said. Back in her bedroom, Emma showered and changed as quickly as she could. She slid on jeans and couldn't help a wince as her t-shirt came down over her head, scraping against the bandages on her back. She was going to need new ones soon, and probably another Arazi. She headed out, only to discover that the hallway was already occupied. "Emma," Mark said, unhitching himself from the wall. His voice sounded tired. "Julian said you were all right. I'm so sorry." "It's not your fault, Mark," she said. "It is," he said. "I trusted Kieran." "You trusted him because you loved him." He glanced at her, surprised. He looked off kilter, and not just because of his eyes. It was as if someone had reached inside him and shaken the roots of his beliefs. She could still hear him screaming as Irloth whipped first Julian and then her. "It was that clear?" "You looked at him like I look at Julian. Like you look at someone you love," she said. "I'm sorry, I didn't realize it before. I thought you..." "Liked Christina, maybe. Kieran sure seemed jealous of her." "Liked girls," she finished. "Teach me to make assumptions." "I do," he said quizzically.
like girls.
Oh, she said, you're bisexual?
Last time I checked, that's what you call it, he said with a brief look of amusement. There are no real words for these things in fairy, so...